Welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby podcast. Today we are going to look into some of the rugby from the weekend and also dig into some of the selections around the Scotland squad, which has been announced this week. So, how are we all?
How's you? Playing at the weekend?
How are you? You're the one that's played a game at the weekend.
The boots back on, I believe.
Yeah, I'm actually better than expected. My neck feels like it's done about 20 scrums in the front row.
How many did it have?
Actually, none in the front row because I was playing in the back. But we also didn't really have scrums, which was...
Oh, yeah, the new laws, the trial laws, aren't they?
Which was mental. So we played free kicks instead of scrums for knock-ons. Mm-hmm. I think we had three scrums in the whole game for other reasons. So yeah, that was a bit weird. So the game was very fast because usually you get a break around a scrum, but there was no breaks, just straight into kick chase. And yeah, have you not heard about this one?
It's driven by COVID, isn't it? Like to try and mitigate the number of times you're in close contact. It was spoken about, I think, initially with the men's game as well, when they were trying to get back up and running and a whole host of different ideas. And I'm really interested to see how, obviously, it would be a bit quicker. Maybe the team selection would change in some ways, but just firsthand, like, was it like a massive difference or was it negligible, really?
No, it was different.
It was massive, very different.
Yeah, and I think from like a strategy point of view, which we maybe hadn't looked into enough. So I think now, like, you've probably got to think about what your best options are in different areas of the pitch in terms of a free kick, which is not something you necessarily give a huge amount of thought to. Because
so we're going to go back to like player walls and stuff like that, and then dummy runners running everywhere, and then the last person getting the pop pass.
Somebody puts it in their jersey
like
and turns
on. A Shane Monroe move. He had us doing all sorts of random stuff on free kick moves. But yeah, so that was probably the biggest difference. And I think you know, from like a front row point of view, it could influence the game a little bit because
you're going to be back in the front row, Rach. Because what they're going to try and do is pick people that can manage the three or four scrums that are there.
Yeah.
And then pick.
No, we've got a very mobile hooker at the moment, so it's okay.
The thing is, though, what on average, what would there be? Maybe that's the men's game. Maybe 8-9 scrums.
Oh, at least, yeah.
Per game would be.
Yeah.
Would it be? Depends. Sometimes you get more. Now, if you don't include resets and you don't include collapse scrums, but actually, what would there be? Maybe around 10 scrums?
Yeah.
Still getting 3 or 4, maybe it's not such a drastic change. That I suppose the unintended consequences might be you might get more kicking, for example. There might be more high balls from a free kick.
There might be loads more kicking.
Yeah. So you're going to get more contest in the air. But I would imagine the general consensus is that, well, certainly for the first 60 minutes, it would be a lot quicker.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the nature of it being the first game we've played in, what, like 7-8 months, there was probably more knock-ons than you would have normally as well. So it did just feel a bit disjointed, to be honest, getting back into it. And took a bit of time to get used to, for sure.
And it's only for your league games, isn't it? It's not... And the Six Nations, it's not for the Women's International, it's just purely this season for your club games, effectively.
Yeah, so just for club games, because in the Premier 15s, they're not testing at the moment. They've just put in some tighter rules around the face-to-face time, basically. Mm-hmm. So there was other rules like you can only drive in the 22s, so no driving malls elsewhere. As soon as the mall stops moving, there's no... like use it call, it's just the ball needs to get out straight up as soon as it stops moving. So there's a few various bits and bobs like that in place which kind of disrupt the flow a little bit. But ultimately it was good to get back playing and blew away a lot of cobwebs.
I think it's important. I'm gonna sound like a gnarled forward like you two, but I think it's important to retain the identity of the game, though. I mean, you need scums, you need mauls, you need, you know, bound mass, you need all the different ways. But I do think it's quite a, you know, I suppose intuitive way of
getting you guys back playing safely if there's no testing in there. And it's interesting to see how the shape of the game changes.
Yeah, and I think it's... I completely agree. Like, rugby is for all shapes and sizes, and I think if we get away from that, then we lose a lot of the values of the game. And at the moment, it is like a trial period with these new laws, and I think we'll probably see some changes come into the second half of the season as well, just off the back of it. But yeah, I do agree that I do prefer it with scrums. I never thought I'd say I want more scrums, but scrums, driving malls, etc. Yeah, no, I definitely would say that.
And would you? I'm getting kind of dewy here, Al. Sorry. Was there more defenders on their feet then? Was it just like everybody defending on their feet? So there wasn't really an opportunity to tie players in to create space.
So there was probably I think we probably potentially didn't attack as well as we could, and we didn't exploit.
Yeah.
Somewhere we probably could have done, but there was a lot more running at people, less space to exploit and stuff like that. So yeah, it was a wee bit different in that respect.
Another big part at the beginning of the week was the fact that Gregor Townsend announced his Scotland squad. A lot of well-known faces in there, a few less well-known who I'm sure will get an opportunity to show what they can do in international way. Seen over the next few weeks, a busy schedule, Rach, for you guys as well. But looking at the men's squad initially, anybody stand out from being in there? Mossy, I see big Richie Gray back in there. Glasgow would have been delighted to get him back. We'll probably be looking for him to play a bit of rugby for Glasgow over the next few weeks, but he's back into Gregor Townsend's squad.
Yeah, it's 40 man squad, which is big, obviously, but you've got these 6 games in 7 weeks coming up. And even looking at the squad that was announced earlier this week, there's one or two knocks and bumps from the opening 2 weekends. So you're potentially going to need those 40, and maybe one or two more. But 3 uncapped players coming in: Ollie Kebble, obviously, Glasgow loose head; Scott Steele, scrum half, who's Harlequins, used to play at London Irish; and Duhan van der Merwer. So 3 uncapped players. Your eye always goes to that. It's such an exciting moment, and all deserving of their inclusion. We know Duhan, you know, and the impact he can make. I said before, it's be really interesting to see how, if he does get an opportunity with international, if he could bring that just ridiculous form and power and pace and try scoring ability to the international arena. And it's such a threat with ball in hand, he really is. And I believe he'll be able to do that internationally as well as at club level. Ollie Kebble's just—it's just a massive man who's playing really well. Like, I think he gets bigger. See him every week, and I think he gets bigger. But his loose head is just just a dynamic, massive ball carrier. Penalised a wee bit of the scrum as we know, but strong in the scrum as well. And Scott Steele, I say scrum half, probably that raised a wee bit eyebrows. Sam Hidalgo-Klein, who's been playing well for Exeter, hasn't been included, but Scott Steele has. Scott Steele is quick, he's aggressive. I know he's a good defender, and lots of thought of his tenacity in defence. He'll be quite similar in how he plays to Ali and George. And Sam Hidalgo-Klein, I imagine, will still be in the picture, although most of his games really have been as a replacement, haven't they? So he maybe needs a wee bit more game time, but. No. There's certainly a bit of depth at 9. So the 3 new caps for me certainly stick out.
I think as well, looking at the list, it's a really exciting group of players. There's a lot of players on there that are in form at the moment. We've talked about Hoggy and Finn coming back in as well, and both those players have played a lot of rugby recently and are playing really well. So it's quite exciting to see names like that, and Duhan coming into the squad as well. To see these players coming together and linking up for Scotland is quite an exciting prospect when we've not seen them play together for such a long time. I think it looks like a really strong squad, probably one of the strongest we've had in a while.
I think as well, you've got, there's maybe, say, 2 or 3 players in there who've really played their way in, which I think is a real strength. And that, I would say, Damon Hoyland, Rob Harley, Matt Fagerson, guys who've not been in maybe the last few squads or a couple of squads, but are actually there because they've played really well.
Yeah.
which I think is a real strength as well. Like sometimes it's, you look at scored and there's automatic picks, you know, but I think these three stick out for me who you could underline the fact that this squad's been picked on people who have been playing well, and that's three really good examples of who kind of forced their way in to the way they've played early in the season.
Yeah, but according to the interpretations of the breakdown,
yeah,
like he's a guy always proud himself on the turnovers he got.
He's sitting top, I think, of since the restart.
Yeah,
number of turnovers in the Premiership in England, I think, as well, or second top.
Yeah. Suits his game, you know, win that battle. It's evolved a little bit since the beginning. Us chatting about it, but no, definitely. And Robert Hartley, I really like it. I think it's a great story because even last night, like it's a performance like Robert that ended up winning that game. Now it could have been an attacking performance. It could have been. Ratu Tungabe was fantastic until he had to go off injured, but it's the edge that somebody like that Robert brings that, you know, not every team needs at international level or club level, just somebody who's willing to do the dark arts well. So yeah. Great to see him back in there. You mentioned the new caps. Yeah, I completely agree on as far as Duhan's concerned. He will transfer what he's been doing week in, week out in an Edinburgh jersey into a Scotland jersey. And you can see him having a big future.
Sorry to interrupt there, but it's a tough challenge to pick a back three, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Like, if you just look at that in isolation, Hoggy, Hugh Jones, I assume, will be considered as back three there. Blair Kinghorn, Darcy Graham, Sean Maitland, who's 48 caps, closing in on 50 caps, Duhan in there. You know, it's not easy to pick. And you will need, as I said right at the very start of this section, you will need probably everyone, but there's a bit of depth there.
Yeah. Nice place to be, though.
Definitely.
You mentioned Hugh Jones and Moshi. You played a little bit across the back line. Does the fact that, I mean, his form's good, he's playing really well. Is he likely to put Hoggy, Stuart Hoggy out of that number 15 jersey? Probably not at this stage. But does his form allow him to be picked elsewhere? Do you think that Greg will be looking at him going, well, I just want to pick him based on the fact he's playing well and we'll put him in the 13 jersey?
Good question, Al. Good question. It's age old. It's horses for courses, isn't it? Do you pick your best players and try and get them involved, or your most potent players and get them find a position? Or is rugby, and I think it's more so at the moment, really structured towards quite precise positions and precise players. But I think Hugh's playing really well at 15. I think Hoggy's obviously the number one there. But Blair can play back there as well. Damon Hoyland playing back there. So that competition is vital. And considering that, you know, you could actually be without the Exeter players for the opening game because of the Premiership final. I think it's the same weekend as the Georgia fixture.
Yeah.
So you need all the competition you can. The other thing that plays into Hugh's hands, he has experience in the midfield, he's gaining experience in the back three, he's comfortable at fullback, actually more than comfortable, excellent at fullback. He's played in the wing. So you're a difficult man to leave out of squad. A match day 23 as well there, because of the options you can cover. So brilliant depth, great options in that back three. And we said last week, it's got to be really important is how well you train, because there's only been two fixtures really this season. There'll be probably a greater, I suppose, influence on selection from your training performance over the next week or so. So the better you can train, the more chance you're going to get in, because you've only had two opportunities in a kind of competitive fixture to lay your marker down.
I do think as well there's going to be, you know, a fair bit of opportunity across the games. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see him coming in across positions, you know, as we go through the autumns, especially as you say with what we have going on in the world at the moment and changes having to happen last minute, that hopefully, you know, players like that will see people getting opportunities and, like you say, trying to prove themselves in those opportunities and in those positions that they might not necessarily have started in originally.
I'm a big believer in being able to play multi positions. I know kind of something that I was lucky enough to do. I played, you know, pretty much every position. But I think it's important because, as you say, Rachel, you could be needed at any time to kind of, even if it's at morning of a game or there's an injury in the warm-up and you've trained all week, you know, you're a centre, but you can play in the back three and you're called on, you have to deliver, you have to do it. But I also think it makes you really aware on the field of what the opposition are going to do. If you've got an innate understanding, if you played standoff and you've asked to play fullback, you've got a pretty good understanding of what the standoff's going to do. So you're trying to be that one step ahead of the opposition, not too far ahead that you end up in the wrong place, but that knowledge of playing different positions and understanding how hard it is in a different position, how hard it is. If Hugh Jones is playing at 15, he knows how hard it is, and it's a nightmare to defend at 13. So he'll be able to give extra communication, extra kind of security, and help that 13, because he knows himself how hard it is when he's coming up and closing the gate and shutting up the last man. So that multi-position, I think, is a strength. And we see it in the forwards as well. Your embodiment of it, Rachel. You know what I mean? I'll never venture into the back row, I don't think, in the second row. But it's important in there as well. Sam Skinner's one. They have that multi position approach.
Started in the back row, mostly.
What, under 10s?
Everyone starts in the back row.
Under 14s, probably.
Was that when you were kicking goals as well, or was that under 18s?
That carried on into the second row as well. But yeah, he started in the back row number 8, and then he went, "Oh, you're too tall, get in the second row." So I completely hear you. I mean, from my time under 14, Alan Glenn's a huge amount of experience as to what number 8s would be doing or not doing. So I can see why Hugh Jones will now be a better centre because of the time he spent at fullback. So great to share that analogy.
Thanks. It's important. But no, strong squad, 40 man. A couple of guys are listed as injured. Duncan Taylor obviously picked up a bump and he was playing well towards the couple of knockout games for Saracens. Rory Hutchison, who's been outstanding for Northampton. It's really disappointing to see he's in the injured list. Kyle Steyn, we spoke about earlier on in the podcast. Byron McGuigan, Alice Craig, Luke Crosby. So there's depth there as well. An injured list, and we don't know how bad or how long term these injuries are. If they're able to join the squad at some point, or if it's long term, we don't know. But a lot of talent there that's going to be needed over the next 7 weeks.
A lot of talent and a lot of opportunities as well. You talk about the fact that, you know, Exeter still have games to play, Racing exactly the same. That there's players in that squad who have maybe not been in a squad for a while, or, you know, haven't as many opportunities to like, who, similar to the young lads coming into Glasgow and Edinburgh, who have a chance now, there's a chance in an international jersey. I look at somebody like Duncan Weir, who's, you know, been part of the squad but not probably been on in the park as much as you would clearly have liked. The chance that he gets a start in one of these games and can step up and show exactly what he's been doing for Worcester.
Well, Gregor, first question for you is, we're back at Orium, we're announcing a squad for the Autumns. I mean, how does that make you feel?
Yeah, excited. Start to see the players coming into camp as well. Speak to the players that are selected and those that aren't selected, but it feels like we're back into it. It's been a long while, but we know it's going to be a really busy period with our players and 6 games to look forward to.
And you've chosen a squad of 40 for the Autumns. Just talk us through the process of selection, because you've obviously had a long time to think about it. But you've chosen 40, and just talk us through that process.
Yeah, well, to start with, the number is probably higher than we wanted or anticipated. But given that we have 4 players involved this week in a European final, so won't be training with us, 3 Exeter players won't be with us for the Georgia week because they've got an English Premiership final. We obviously had to balance that with getting the right numbers for training so we can make training productive. We've tracked everybody's form for a while. Players playing in England have been able to play more games than those in Scotland. And in terms of our two pro teams, Edinburgh have had more games than Glasgow. So we're looking at form, we're looking at where players are physically, we're looking at what they did previously when they've been in a camp, and then it's about getting those discussions on what we feel is right for this 3-week period, and then there will be another 4 weeks when we come together for the Autumn Nations Cup.
You mentioned it there about the boys who won't be featuring in camp as early as others. From your point of view, you must be delighted that you've got players now, you know, on these stages playing at the top level of the game. How excited are you to see these guys perform at that level?
Yeah, very excited. This week is European final, and to have four players in our squad involved in that, and also Sam Hidalgo-Klein is just outside the squad, that's great to see. They'll get the whole build-up to that game, which is similar to an international. They're going to be involved in a high-level club game, and one team's going to win, so they're going to take that confidence into when they come into camp with us. So yeah, it's been great to see how well our players have played individually. There's been a lot of challenges since the last time we were together, which was on a bus on the way home from Cardiff back in early March, and most, if not all, our players have responded to the challenges really well, and have got themselves into great shape and very good form for the club. So we just need to build on that and obviously get the players accommodated, acclimatised into the rugby we're going to play over this period.
And three of those players, Gregor, will be uncapped, coming in for the first time. We see Doohan van der Mever, Ollie Keble and Scott Steele. What have you made of them, and why have they been chosen?
Yeah, well, let's look at the two guys that play for Edinburgh Glasgow. So Ollie and Doohan have been here now. This is a fourth season, and have played consistently well for both clubs. They're timing their run to form really well too. I believe they started the season in excellent form for the clubs, and they've worked really hard as well in the off season. So we're looking forward to seeing them in our camp, and obviously if they do get the opportunity to play Test rugby, we can't wait to see them do that too. For Scott Steele, it's a different route that he's taken. We've looked at Scott for a number of years when he was making the breakthrough at Leicester and then at London Irish, and he was a real hard-working player, but he was in a very competitive position with the other nines that we've had in our squad over that time. We feel since the restart, he's taken his game to another level. He's got himself very fit. Defensively, he's been outstanding, and the basics of his game, his passing, his kicking, have been at a high level. And to go down to Harlequins on a loan and then really win his the starting place here is a testament to the form he's in.
Another player in the Premiership that's caught your eye and coming back to the squad after a couple of years is Blair Cowan. What have you made of him for London Irish?
Well, again, consistency and playing really well for a club team up against some really good opponents. Not just since the restart, but before that. But he had a game for London Irish against Northampton just around the middle of the Six Nations where he's outstanding, one of the best players in the field. And since the restart, he's in the physical shape of his life. He's transferred that into performances where he's been the hardest worker player in the field, and he has a really good attacking ability when he gets his hands on the ball, and obviously his probably key strength is winning jackal turnovers, which have become more of a feature of the game since the restart, because the referees have applied the law around the breakdown differently.
Now, Greg, if we look at the autumn itself, it's a long period. You've got a number of games coming up, but I guess one of the benefits for you as coaching staff is you're going to have a lot of time with these players, probably a lot more time than you would normally get with the players at this time of the year. That must be a huge benefit for you to have that cohesion, but also the time to spend with the boys.
Yeah, that's right. It does feel like a Six Nations tournament in November. We get the benefit in spring to have around 7 weeks with our players. During that time, they do go back to their clubs, which won't be the case for a period with our English-based players, because the season has now ended there. But to have the players for 8 weeks, which will be in total, we've got a camp week this week, we've got week's training or a couple of days' training in between Wales and the Italy game. So that's great for us. Hopefully good for the players that they get to spend more time in a Scotland camp with new friends or old friends that they're seeing, and also being with this team for a longer period should mean that we can build on aspects of the game that normally you don't cover. Normally it's about clarity, getting that cohesion early in a tournament, whereas in this case, especially as we go into November and December, we can add parts to our game.
It will be an empty stadium for the Georgia game, but you know that you'll have fans at home and around the, not just Scotland, but the world cheering on Scotland. How important is it that you kind of get those messages across to the players and remind them that, yes, there's nobody in the stadium, but there's a huge, huge backing at home?
Yeah, well, we've really had the benefit of the crowds that have poured into BT Murrayfield over the last few years that have given us a huge energy boost. Lots of supporters have gone to away games as well. And we know that'll be different during this period. But if we can get the connections with the supporters who are watching at home, then that'll be a great boost to our squad. So I urge all supporters to connect with us, with our players. We know in this time that the performance of the national team can give a real lift to everyone through this challenging period. And our players will be doing all they can to put their best performances out there and put a smile back on our people's faces.
We touched on him very briefly earlier, but obviously Finn coming back into the squad after a bit of a layoff, potentially in line to get his 50th cap, quite a big one then.
Great to see him back. You know, his form in that rushing shot has been at times incredible. He's got some big games coming up as well, so it'll be interesting to see that whole dynamic with the extra players, and as we mentioned earlier. But yeah, for Finn, reasonably young guy, to still to be up for getting his 50th cap, big moment for him. And I hopefully can put a full stop very much in all the conversations we were having during last year's Guinness Six Nations. It's just about getting the best squad available for Gregor to be able to choose from, and getting one of the best players in the world at the moment in a Scotland jersey.
Yeah, his form's excellent, isn't it? He's really been kind of star name, as you say, across the world, want to watch. He'll have a lot to catch up on, obviously, the kind of disappointing episode during the Six Nations and the way Scotland's kind of games evolved maybe since a year ago when he last played. Do you know, there are different coaches in there, there's different management in there, there's probably different defensive structures, so it will be hard for him to get everything up and running. I know there's been dialogue and contact over the last few weeks and stuff which will help with that, but it's brilliant to see the talented guy back in, and he'll be in to work hard to fight his way into the side. Obviously, Adam's there, Dunkey Weir's there, but Finn brings a kind of star quality that certainly gets people off their backsides and on their feet, and really challenges defences. So big game, was it this weekend? The Champions Cup final, and then I assume he'd be available thereafter for the internationals.
Well, so give us a little bit on James Lang and how he's been playing for anybody that doesn't know him well as a player.
Yeah, James, he was last involved maybe, I think it was the end of last summer. He certainly was when the Canada-North America tour, he was first capped out there. Mainly a 12, but he can play 10, but I like him in the midfield. He's a distributing kind of creative player in that midfield channel, defends really well. He's a really important player for Harlequins as well, actually. Plays a lot of big games, is entrusted with a lot of big goal kicks. So he is a good goal kicker. Back up mainly to Marcus Smith at Harlequins, but he'll take the long range ones, and he's kicked a lot of important goals for Harlequins over the last 2 years or so. And how would I describe him? He's a good, really good all-round distributing, clever ball-playing 12. And I think that's Scotland traditionally, I think, are best when they have that option. Sam Johnson's been injured, but it's good to see his name there as well. similar in many ways in terms of his distribution and his ability to create stuff. And if you can get, I don't know, for me, a playmaker at number 10 and number 12, I think that's where Scotland are at the creative best. And then you've got your strike runners out wide, and Hoggy can jump in there at first receiver if he's playing and create stuff as well. So you want to, because defences are so well organised and so structured, you actually want as many ball players, you know, on the field as possible, I think. As long as you've got the right balance with ball carriers and heavy runners that can get your goal forward. So I think James Lang fits that bill. He'll be pretty up to speed with things because, as I say, it was reasonably recent he was involved in the national squad. So good to see him in there as well.
A big news that came out this week, unfortunately, due to the ongoing restrictions due to COVID, is that the domestic league is going to have to be pushed back. You're looking at hopefully a start date of January 1st, but all still under review. Now, that will include the part-time professional league and the Fosbrook Super 6. It's tough for those guys, even from a playing point of view, to feel as if, you know, it's coming back and then going away. But it's just a little bit of what life is at the moment, Rachel, isn't it? It's very difficult to make any long-term plans.
Yeah, I think it's super disappointing for them, but I would imagine, and you know, we're the same, that at the moment as players, we are very much, you know, not getting ahead of ourselves. And I think it's the same with everyone in the world at the moment. It's very difficult to make plans, and you've kind of got to keep your expectations in check to some extent. It's disappointing for Scotland in general, just from a point of view of having some rugby on the go and stuff. But I think safety has got to prevail, and with the state of what's happening at the moment in the UK, then it does make sense. And I'm sure the players will be able to kind of accept that. And it does make things difficult, though. You know, you've been getting towards, you know, that explosive phase before you're about to play and stuff, and to have that push back by quite a while, it's difficult from a motivation point of view. These guys have been training all through lockdown and all through a pre-season. To then kind of go back to the start of that is really difficult. So it'll be interesting to see how they manage that and manage them coming back in. But it is super disappointing. But as I say, I'm sure these players were aware this probably was on the cards to some extent. You know, we just never know when things are going to get pulled, and that's just the nature of things at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. It's difficult for everybody, isn't it? And I think when we spoke last week to Professor Leach, we kind of knew there was going to be announcements. We knew there was going to be changes, and you're right. It's a safety thing. It's a nationwide thing, and I think it is the right thing to pause the return until it's safe for everyone, players included, and also not just the players but the clubs. You know what I mean? It's a club officials and club environments, it's a tough kind of message for them, and a more practical message as well, that you're not going to get back in around your community in the kind of competitive form of competitive matches until, you know, at least January. But well, it's just an unfortunate consequence of where we are, and as you say, Rach, the safety of everybody has to come first. But it's good that, yeah, I think they'll still be able to train in some way, shape or form. It's not right back to square one where there's obviously a complete and utter lockdown. So hopefully that within their bubbles and with the right protocols and processes, there can still be some enjoyment and still some preparation for when the leagues do kick off. And just imagine that first game come January. Be a few pair of clean boots and new boots.
Yeah. The outfit. The S&C coaches as well. Strength conditioning guys must be rubbing their hands together. Just thinking, Rachel, you thought your pre-season was long.
I know.
These poor guys are going to be close on a year. But yeah, tough times. But, you know, sensible decisions made by rugby development and the wider group to try and get the best laid plans in. And I suppose, like many things at the moment, it's about making it the best of it with whatever restrictions are in place. Plenty of other rugby over the weekend as well. Muscat, you would have watched it all, but I was working yesterday the Glasgow game. But why don't we start on the Edinburgh game? Disappointing. Munster are incredible at winning games in the last minute at the moment, but it was another one that was there to be won.
Yeah, they're back to what Munster are famed for, isn't it? They're two wins from two, both late on. It was just, I think, 3 minutes short of injury full time at the weekend, and it was an injury time the week before. But in all honesty, I think Edinburgh will be kicking themselves. So it was 25-23. The lead changed hands countless times. Munster actually started pretty well. They were physical. They were abrasive. They went ahead through a couple of early penalties. But then Edinburgh completely came in, and I thought, were in complete control. Their physicality was excellent. Their defence was really good. It was a complete answer to anything that Munster was throwing at them. The build-up to WP Nell's try was classic forward play, making yards. And actually, at half-time, you're thinking, Edinburgh could pull away here. I thought they were in good shape, but the Achilles heel again was discipline and gave away a lot of penalties in around the breakdown and other areas that allowed Munster to keep a foothold in the game. Obviously, kicked six of them at goal, so it was 18 points right off the bat. But the penalties just stunted Edinburgh's momentum and missed opportunities. Good to see them creating opportunities, but disappointing not for them to take them. And I think the general consensus, having a look around, was maybe it was a step up on the week before against the Ospreys, which was probably true. But I felt the loss. I mean, Edinburgh should have started better last week against the Ospreys. We said that. We know that. They were frustrated. The weather wasn't great. But you were actually beaten by a team who were playing really well and on the night, whereas I think Munster were okay. They were okay to good. And I just thought Edinburgh, if their discipline was better and if they'd taken their chances, could really have got a really important win away from home. So it's a frustrating.
A massive win, considering the dynamic of their conference as well. You know, you expect that both of those teams will be in the mix at the end of it, and it could have been a huge one, absolutely. You've got to look at Munster as well, though. And Rach, there's something about, you know, a team that can just play for that 80 minutes, always play for that 80 minutes, never go away. They're showing themselves in good stead. As you point out, Mossy, they weren't brilliant, but they played well enough to be in the fight. And that's what they're so good at. It goes back to, traditional Munster. I mean, Ronan Agara, I don't know how many games he won with a last-minute drop goal, but just because Munster continued, always battled to be in that fight.
I think it's, like you put it, it's like a team that can find a way to win. So it's not necessarily playing beautiful rugby, but they've almost like got that belief in that they'll always find a way to win. And I think that actually, a team like that is so difficult to play against. We have it in the women's game with Saracens. You know, they don't necessarily play the best rugby in our league, but they somehow always find a way to win. And it's that kind of dogged fight right up to the 80th minute, capitalising on the opposition's mistakes, like you say, with the discipline, the penalty count, and making the most of those opportunities. Those are the teams that I think are quite often the hardest to beat compared to some that play the prettiest, best rugby. But like you say, yeah, that mentality and that ability to always find a way is something to hold pretty high in world rugby, I think.
They do that. They've always had a tradition of doing that. And they're doing it now with new players, a lot of younger players, a lot of kind of, you know, under-20 players coming through. So it is part of the DNA, but not to be too hard on Edinburgh, but part of them staying in the game was Edinburgh's ill-discipline. Mm. You know what I mean? So it's not as if they're in control of that. There was 13 penalties against Edinburgh. There's a swing there, and we always say keeping it under 10 is the goal. So it's maybe not a huge discrepancy or as big a discrepancy as I'm making out, but I think Munster staying in the game was more down to Edinburgh's ill-discipline. And they'll get it fixed. I mean, it's over-eager at the breakdown at times. It's technical penalties other times. So, I mean, it will iron itself out. And I'm sure, you know, everybody's aware of that. But the one positive was the losing bonus point. I know it's only a point, but as we said 3 or 4 weeks in a row on this podcast, I think home form's going to determine a lot this year with the uncertainty over games, selection, who's available, who's unavailable. And if you can win your home games and pick up anything away from home over the season, I think you'll be in a reasonable shout. So that losing bonus point is some reward, but it could have been more, definitely.
especially over there. Like, there wouldn't be many teams go over there and win. So to come away with something's great. Come away knowing that you should have won the game could be a positive as well. I think there's a probably a tendency at the moment for everybody to look at the last five games that Edinburgh have played as a collective. But it's the end of a new season, the beginning of the next one, albeit the time frames are a lot tighter. So they're only two games in. But it's hard now, and we talked about in comms in the Glasgow game as well, hard now with the amount of players that are in the squad, 13 Edinburgh players, I believe, in the squad, 14, in the Scotland squad, that there's going to be a different group of players that are challenged to go on and get those wins.
Yeah.
And that's exciting for the players as well. Do you know what I mean? It's difficult to lose your senior players, but you mentioned it yesterday in commentary, Al, the fact that is an opportunity for those players coming in as well. And I'm a massive believer in almost like not knowing how good things are until you try them. There will be positives that come out of whether it's younger players or whether it's players who are not in the team week in, week out, delivering performance over the next, obviously not this week, that the pro teams ain't playing, but over the next 6 or 7 weeks during the international window, that there will be some gems unearthed. But it's hard. All the teams are going to lose players as well.
Yeah.
But traditionally, the Scottish teams lose more than the other teams in the league. But it's an opportunity to perform. And I think Edinburgh's next home game's Connacht, or the next game against is at home on a Monday night, I think, against Connacht. So a good opportunity to get their season up and running.
Dave, well, you mentioned my commentary yesterday. Must say, I know you watched the game. I hope you managed to find
no,
out.
I was making a curry for my tea, and I was actually thought, I can't wait any longer. The smell was wafting through to the living room. I thought, Al, I'm going to have to pause you and come back to you later. But I didn't mute it. I just paused it.
Are we home for the curry? Oh, no, you can't do that. No, you could have thrown it out the window.
No.
So the Glasgow game, two teams that had lost their first game as well. Munster being a big part of that, Scarlett's one. A lot of positives. Glasgow getting the first home victory, first time at Scotstoun in 7.5 months, getting that victory. I said it in commentary, we chatted about it a wee bit before we came on air. There was an opportunity there to get that bonus point, wasn't there? That 17-0 going for goal. I think we'll look back from a Glasgow point of view, so that was a moment where we lost the momentum, lost the energy. Scarlett signed, got territory, and they were buoyant, and they played exactly the way you should play when you get 14.
I think you're right. I think what was needed was a win. What was needed was a win at home, as we've just touched on again, and it's great to see Glasgow getting that that first win of the season, or the new season, really. So that was much needed. I thought, actually, you're right. I thought, that 17-0, you could really try and attack more. Yeah, they don't score to that point, so you're looking for, two more to get your bonus point. But coinciding with that, I actually thought the Scarlets bench made a bit of difference coming on. Some experienced players, Ken Owens coming on up front. Kieran Hardy's a dangerous nine, although Gareth Davis played reasonably well. Rhys Patchell came on as well, made a bit of a difference. So they had a strong bench coming on at that time where they kind of almost the intensity dropped out again for a little bit, and then the impact of the bench made a difference. But Glasgow had to win at home. They did against a team that's been their bogey side, really. I think Scarlett's won 4 of the last 5 occasions or something up at Scotstoun. So good to see. But yeah, it was a game that I think it was an early season game, wasn't it? There'll be more fluidity and more fluency to how they play in the weeks ahead, I think.
And about Danny Wilson coming out, especially in that first half, we talked pre-game about the fact that Scarlett's and Glasgow, two teams that traditionally throw the ball around and attack from all over the place. But Danny, for me, would have very much been looking for the team to build into that first half, and 10-0 at half time he'd have probably been delighted with, because he'd structured the game well. They kicked the ball out deliberately, put pressure on the Scarlets line out. It was just that last 25 minutes that you can probably step back and go, we had an opportunity to really go for them. But it'll be interesting to see how Glasgow's game evolves over the next few months under Danny. A few key players going into the Scotland squad as well, but how he brings through the young lads that we talked about earlier on.
There's a lot of good, again, similar to Edinburgh, there's
there's a lot of attacking fluency in the young players who are coming through the system in Glasgow. And, you know, we've mentioned them before. I won't mention them because they put excess pressure on these youngsters. But I'm really interested in the next 5 or 6 weeks as well, because it will be that opportunity for a lot of them. And I think, you know, there'll be a few raised eyebrows because there is talent, good attacking talent, a desire to do well. So, yeah, look forward to it. But good to get Glasgow getting the win. And up to, well, two games in, they're up third place in Conference A. So, yeah, lot to work on, but important to get that victory.
Support Scotland this season as one. Scottish Rugby has introduced a new membership for fans at home and abroad to back the sport in Scotland during the COVID-19 pandemic. Sign up for Scotland now at scottishrugby.org. That's all from us this week on the official Scottish Rugby podcast. As always, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with more exclusive content.